everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Disciple Makers Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Stovall. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Today's episode is brought to you by Disciple First. We're going to be hearing from Glenn Underhill, Craig Etheridge, and Chad Vandiver talking about evangelism. And if you're wondering about how to get started with evangelizing the lost, this episode is going to be super helpful for you to learn some practical steps towards being someone who is advancing the kingdom of God through evangelism. And you may be somebody like me who grew up in a legalistic faith tradition, and you might have some baggage or irrational fears around sharing the gospel that you need to process and work through. This episode is going to be helpful for you to begin to think about that kind of stuff. All right, let's jump in. This is Glenn, Craig, and Chad talking to us about evangelism.
All right. Hey, guys, it's so great to see everybody. My name is Glenn Underhill. I'm the executive director for Disciple First. I've joined with a few of my really great friends. And in fact, let me give you guys just a few seconds to introduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit about what you do, and then we'll dive into what we're going to talk about today.
All right. Well, thank you, Glenn. I'm Craig Etheridge. I'm the founder of Disciple First, also the pastor of First Colleyville Church, which is in the DFW area right by the Dallas-Fort Worth airport. And yeah, super excited about our conversation today. We're going to be talking about evangelism and the importance of that and how to get traction in evangelism in your church. And I guess I just want to say right off the top, man, we are in the trenches right now with you. I mean, these are things we're banging out. And so we're happy to share things that we're learning and things that we're trying as we look at Jesus' model. So Glenn, glad to be here with you.
Yeah, great. Chad?
Absolutely. I'm Chad Vandiver, and I'm the pastor of missions and vocation at First Colleyville. I'm also the co-founder with Craig of our Cross Creek Network, which is our church-based, church-planting network. It's planting churches here in North Texas, in the northeastern United States, and all around the world. I mean, I'm so excited just to get to share some of the stories that we're seeing people coming to Christ through this movement. I mean, I think this is a new day for missions and for church planting. And, you know, I like when we think about multiplication, you know, that doesn't happen without evangelism. And so I'm excited about to talk about this. How can we do that even better in today's mission field?
Yeah. Well, I'm super excited that you guys are on this call together, and just looking forward to what we can learn. And really kind of our heart really behind this is to give some real practical things that you guys that are listening to us can just begin implementing right there where you're at, where God's planted you to do ministry. You know, one of the things that we're often asked is this idea in disciple making, somehow evangelism somehow doesn't always translate into that word disciple making, which is just not the way that Jesus saw that, right? So I have a good friend that always has said, hey, disciple making begins with evangelism and it ends with evangelism. And so really just want to spend some time talking about how do we kind of raise up the temperature, because as we're looking at stats across the board, unfortunately, the church really in North America is on the decline. And a lot of that, I think, is in due part because we're just not seeing people who are far from God, you know, taking those next steps towards Christ and helping to facilitate that as messengers, as conveyors of the gospel, the advancement of the kingdom of God, that is God's heart, you know, and we've heard it said that God, people matter to God and therefore mm-hmm. really should matter to us. So let's kind of unpack this a little bit. You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about at Disciple First is this idea of going back to the life of Jesus and just looking at what he was doing and saying, okay, let's put those practices and principles into place. And yeah. Really, I think as you look at Jesus's life, there's really kind of four that really kind of stand out. And I think are really some things that we can do practically in our churches as we're thinking about that. So the first one that we see really this kind of really emerge out of the Gospels and out of the life through the life of Jesus is this idea of being a friend of sinners. I know that Jesus on several occasions was called a friend of sinners. So Pastor Craig, when we talk about this idea of being a friend of sinners, what does that look like, and how does that translate into what you guys are doing at First Colleyville to really help engage your congregants in being friends of sinners?
Yeah, boy, this is really where it starts, right? Is this attitude toward people that are far from God. You know, unfortunately, in many Christian circles, people that are far from God are seen to be the enemy. You know, they're people you want to stay away from and people that are the problem with our society instead of a great opportunity to share the gospel. I mean, this is our mission. Mm-hmm. And so that's I think that's one reason why we're seeing so many churches that are just failing to really be effective in reaching people with the gospel. We could bore you with all kinds of stats and figures. I think we all agree we've got a lot of room for growth in this area. And it starts with just our disposition toward people that do not know Jesus. You know, Jesus was a friend of sinners. Matthew 11:19, Jesus himself refers to that almost secondhand because he had heard it from others. Yeah. And of course, this was not a compliment. You know, this was a jab because he's always hanging out with these publicans and sinners and tax collectors and this rough crowd. But Jesus was drawn to people that had, that were outside the realm. You know, they were outside the realm of the spiritual community, and he had a real compassion and love for people that were drifting and were hurting. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a good question to ask you, Pastor, if you're in a church, is your church a friend of people far from God? Are your people friends of people far from God? Do you have a attitude that wants to reach across and build those kind of friendships? And I think it really starts with the lead pastor. You know, do you have friends that do not know Jesus? Are you hanging out in places where people that don't know Jesus hang out? Are you seeking to cultivate those kind of relationships? I think it really starts there with the pastor and with staff. You know, it's easy to say, well, the church isn't doing a good job. You know, when you get down to you, okay, how are you doing in building these friendships? Then it gets really personal. But that's where we have to start, I think, right there. Do we have friends that we call friends, that would call us a friend, that do not know Jesus?
Yeah, absolutely. I think also it's just easy to stay in a little Christian bubble. You know, here, mm-hmm. especially in the South, in the Bible Belt, it's very easy for us to only talk to Christians every day. You know, our kids may go to Christian private school. We go to church. We connect with, you know, we go buy our food at Chick-fil-A. You know, some call that Jesus chicken. And there's, you know, there's all these connections that we have, but we have to be really intentional about getting out of our bubble and connecting to the community. And so there's so many ways that we can do that. And Jesus modeled that extremely well in terms of just making a natural part of his daily rhythm. And I think if we did that, if we thought about, hey, where do we buy our gas? Where do we buy our groceries? Where do we connect with people in our natural rhythms of our daily lives? It would just become a habit. And, you know, it's a habit that we need to form. It's as we're entering this new mission field, you know, post COVID, you know, there's definitely an opportunity there. Lots of people that are seeking hope for the first time. Sometimes they've realized that the world isn't what they thought it was. And so there's lots of opportunities to do that in just our daily natural rhythm of going through our day. So, yeah.
You know, I would just add one little thing here. In John chapter 4, right after Jesus has this encounter with the woman at the well, which is kind of one of those experiences, Chad, like you're talking about, just having these encounters that the woman leaves and he's having this debrief with his team. And he says, open your eyes and look. The field is ripe to harvest. Look around. And I think that's a great place to start. Okay, let's just stop and look around me. Who are the people that I'm naturally encountering in my daily life? Where are the places where I could encounter people and literally make a list and start to cultivate those relationships? Find the guys that you're encountering at the store or some hobbies that you go to, whatever the case may be, and intentionally trying to build a relationship there, build a friendship first, and then look for opportunities to share the gospel.
Absolutely. Yep. So those are great steps. You know, obviously this idea of, you know, stop and look around you know, create a list of people that are in your circle of influence who are far from God, and then to, you know, begin to activate conversations with turning, you know, casual conversations into what we like to call around here gospel conversations, right? Kind of moving that needle from casual to spiritual, then from spiritual to these gospel conversations. I'd like to even drill down just a little bit deeper, because I know oftentimes in the past, I know, for instance, in our denomination, the Southern Baptist denomination, that we've utilized other, you know, utilized strategies like teaching classroom-oriented types of evangelism, and that has not always amounted into a whole lot of success. And, you know, obviously, you know, classrooms is not where you make disciples or disciple makers, right? So, just on a real practical level, I know we're working at First Colleyville to really do some training, raising, you know, this idea of how Jesus did it. You know, he took guys on fishing trips and showed them. So what would it look like, in a, just a real practical sense, how, you know, would either one of you turn this idea of taking someone who's a friend of a sinner on just on a real practical level, and then how do you train, how are you training that out into to the people at First Colleyville?
Yeah, I'll give you something, and then Chad, you jump on in here because this is your blocking and tackling. I mean, Chad trains church planters, and this is kind of 101 how church planting works. But I tell you, first thing we do is we include evangelism training as a part of our discipleship process. So when we're discipling a person, we make sure that we spend about 7 weeks talking about how you build relationships with people, how do you move conversations, how do you present the gospel. So that's in those kind of small 3 to 4 people in a group, men with men, women with women training. And then out of that, we try to create ways for them to practice, right? And just to get used to that. So one, I'll give you a couple ideas. One way we do that is that we have a ministry that's a homeless ministry we partner with. So I'll take my guys and we'll go down to the homeless ministry and we will serve dinner or supper with that team. And then as they're eating, we just split up and we sit down and we have conversations and we try to see how far we can go in these conversations to talk about spiritual things and to share the gospel. It's a great way to minister to people and in a relational kind of way to practice having these kind of conversations. And they get to hear me do it and then they get to try it. It works really, really well. Another thing we're doing is that when we send teams out to do service projects in the community, we may be repainting somebody's house or we may be picking up trash in some neighborhood. We have a couple of people that we've been training in our discipleship process to share the gospel. They go out and their whole purpose of that project is not to do the work of the project, but simply to try to engage neighbors and people that are coming around and observing in spiritual conversations. And again, it's a great place to model the spiritual conversations, get them practice and engaging and moving those conversations along. So those are two really practical things that we've done that are not awkward. They're not knocking on somebody's door that you don't know. You know, there are times when people would naturally want to talk to you, and we find those to be very fruitful in, and we're actually going to be doing more and more and more of those as just opportunities. And I guess the third one, which kind of segues over to Chad, is that is mission trips. You know, when we go on a mission trip, boy, they're just immersed with opportunities to share the gospel. And so they may do a lot of sharing the gospel personally on a mission trip. Well, that translates back to how they share right here where they live.
Absolutely. And that's the goal, right? Is to create this rhythm of back and forth. So when they go on mission trips, you know, there's a boldness, I think, that happens there because they don't live there. They're now, we have a church plant there, and that's the beauty of having a church planting network, is you have a church planter with a team that's on mission to disciple those people that become believers from the mission team. But then that mission team coming back, man, that, you know, being bold here at home and then on trips. And I love that. And because we have the growth series, you know, we're using that in all of our church plants. And I love the fact that the first 3 weeks of book one really are helping people understand what is their relationship, you know, to Jesus. You know, are they a believer or not? I've seen people become believers in those first 3 weeks of book one. And that's awesome, because for a church plant, and they're gathering people that maybe aren't believers yet or are wanting to explore what it means to be a believer. And then as they become believers, they're gathering them and creating momentum. I'm really excited. You know, our first church plant in New York is in Harlem, and they're about to gather a group of men in front of Columbia University there to have a grow group. And, you know, there wasn't one in front of Columbia, but a mechanic at Columbia University became a believer. And so he is hungry. He's going to be our missionary there on campus. And so that's the way I think God often works, is as you're going into a community, you find those points, or those places in a city where people naturally gather. You know, where are the university campuses, or the coffee shops, or the parks, or all the places where people are naturally gathering, and you join in on what they're doing. You know, I'll never forget, my wife and our little son were in a park in Madrid when we were missionaries there, and every day I'd come home and they would be there in the park talking to the other mothers there. And so sure enough, my wife had tons of friends. We also had little kids who were all playing together. All the mothers watched each other's kids and kind of parented each other's kids. And then she started sharing her faith with them. And so, you know, it's just a beautiful, natural time to do that. The same thing, you know, as these guys are connecting in Harlem, you know, they've discovered that basketball is a great tool to have a gospel conversation. And I think oftentimes we forget that sports is a great way for people to see who we are as believers, right? Our character shines in the sport. You know, Christ comes out and not fouling people or not getting upset and just, you know, being a good sport. And so they've discovered that's a great opportunity to do that. So they are sharing their faith actively just through basketball. But I think there's a lot of things that we could explore and looking at that we do anyway, or that we love to do, that we just thought about how to strategically engage the people around where we live in doing that, it would become very natural. And I love what you say. You know, it's not awkward or weird. It's just a part of our daily rhythm. Mm-hmm.
I want to take a quick break and tell you about something cool happening over at discipleship.org. It's our discipleship.org collective. It's an online community for disciples and disciple makers. And if you fit in either one of those categories, then the collective is designed just for you. The website itself is super cool because it's basically like stepping into a virtual church building with a welcome center, an auditorium for our main events, and even classrooms. Right now, you can get free access to this collective with all of its webinars, seminars, ebooks, and even disciple-making assessments for you personally or for your whole church. And this is a community, so you can also have the opportunity to connect with other disciple makers. And while membership is free, there's also a premium access option, which includes courses, certifications, and online gatherings with other leaders from around the world. So head on over to discipleship.org/collective and sign up for your free membership today. Hey, let me interrupt for just a second so that you can hear a brief message from our sponsors. Here they are.
What do sex, NASCAR, Texas Hold'em, and high chairs have to do with making disciples? Once you know, you'll never make disciples the same way again. Hi, I'm Doug Burrier, a decision scientist and a disciple maker. Do you wish you could find the Waldo in disciple making? That one thing you've been looking for? Well, I found it in the Sustainable Discipleship Method that gets 90%+ success every time on every continent, every culture. With it, we made 1,392 new disciples last year. We're on track to triple that this year. Get the same results as bunches of churches and thousands of disciples across 8 denominations all around the world. Even better, it costs you nothing, zero, zip. Just find a Waldo at the 2024 Disciple Making Forum, stop by the booth, or even better, sit in on one of our 4 breakouts. No hype, no pitch, no sales, just 4 proven strategies to build a powerhouse of a disciple-making culture. Come find out what sex, NASCAR, Texas Hold'em, and high chairs have to do with disciple-making. Can't wait? Visit our website at sustainable-discipleship.com. That's sustainable-discipleship.com. See you at the conference.
All right, let's get back to the episode.
So really what I hear you guys really kind of saying is, at the end of the day, we've got to provide some opportunities for people to do it together, to gather some of that experience. But then as their heart is being turned towards people who are far from God, then they have the opportunity to start transitioning some of those relationships that they have in their circle of influence, to take some of the things that they're working on, maybe as a team or with you guys that they've seen modeled. Now they can translate it in real time with the people that they're kind of doing life with, and really have a certain set of influence with, which I think really is what, you know, they watch Jesus do over and over and over and over and over. And then it ultimately the book of Acts shows, you know, how some of that really began to play itself out. So again, that first really principle, you know, in evangelism for Jesus was being a friend of sinners. The second thing we see really out of his life, guys, is this idea of looking for those who are in crisis. So let's kind of unpack a little bit of that. What do we mean when we say looking for people who are in crisis? Craig?
Yeah, you know, you go back to Matthew 9:36, and Jesus, it said he saw the crowds and he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And, you know, I remember one time I was just studying the life of Jesus, and it hit me that he went from one person to the next person, the next person, the next person. It was like in this stretch of like six different encounters, and every single one of them was a person in crisis. One was a leper, one had a sickness, one had a child who was about to die. All different kinds of crises, but they were all drawn to Jesus because of their crisis. And as I was pondering that, it really, God began to show me that, you know, this is one of the ways that God draws people to him, is that he allows crisis to come into our life to wake us up to our need. You know, many people, especially in America, you know, they don't feel like they need God that much. They've got a good job and insurance, and, you know, they've got everything working their way. But when they hit a crisis, you know, when their child is struggling with a drug addiction, or their marriage is in the tank, or they lost their job, or they got a bad report from the doctor, or any of those things, then all of a sudden they realize that they're not as in control of their life as they think they are. And so they're looking for spiritual help. And I can say, you know, most of the people that I've got over the last 5 years that I've got to lead to the Lord have been people that are in some way in a crisis. And there are different kinds of crises, right? There are crises of circumstance, where much like what I just described, things are happening to them. There's a crisis of belief, like I don't really know what I believe anymore, and I'm struggling with my faith. There's a crisis of mortality. Maybe somebody they know has died, and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to live forever, and how do I face death? There are lots of different kinds of crisis. Crisis of identity. You know, who am I really, and why am I here? You know, these are all really important things. So I've learned that sometimes I'll try to share the gospel with somebody that's not in crisis, and it's just, they're just not receptive. But I share a gospel with somebody that is in crisis, and they are open. And so I've tried to just put on my spiritual glasses a little bit and say, Lord, open my eyes to the people around me that are in crisis. Draw them to me, or help me see who they are so I can go to them and just love on them and encourage them. And in that encouragement, I can share the hope that I have in Christ.
Yeah, it sounds to me like what you're really trying to communicate is this idea of, man, we're asking God for some perception, right? That when you talk about opening our eyes to the harvest, that, you know, like what we've talked a lot about, this principle of receptivity, you know, that people tend to be more receptive to spiritual guidance, conversations, spiritual things when there is a crisis in their life. So yeah, that's great. Yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say also, you know, there's so many crises happening around the world. And so connecting to those people groups from those countries where you are, you know, I first encountered this on March 11, 2004, when the bomb went off in Madrid, and God led me to the place where the bombs were built and to engage the people, a couple hundred men there who were scared to death, fully anticipating the Spanish military to converge on that community. And they eventually did. But at that moment, man, fear had taken over. Those people were in crisis. They were looking for hope. And so the opportunity to have gospel conversations with people who were very far from God, right? They were all practicing Islam, became very easy, because, you know, they were searching for something else. They said, you know, that's not what I believe. I don't believe in that kind of terrorist activity. I want to find something else. And so there's huge opportunity. So the same thing is true here, especially post-COVID, or as the world crises are happening. You can find those people groups in your community and engage them, and often love on them. And I love to, even just in a basic, you know, situation, there's a church planner in New York who provides food for church planners in an area, and other people who are in need because they've lost their job, or they don't have anybody, you know, coming to their church, or they have issues that they're dealing with there. And so he shows up, helps them, blesses them, and other evangelical leaders are learning from him, you know, how to engage your community. And so I think when we seize the day like that, when we seize in a moment of opportunity, we engage the people like never before.
You know, Glenn, I'd like to just add one thing here. And, you know, some people might hear that and say, oh, well, you're just taking advantage of people in their weakest moment, right?
Right, right.
And that is not what we're saying. Jesus had tremendous compassion for people that were hurting. And so if we have the compassion of Jesus, we have the same attitude in us that's in Jesus, then we're going to be drawn to people that are hurting to help them. And the greatest help we can give is to introduce them to the God who loves them and cares for them and will provide for them. So it's not taking advantage of people's crises to, you know, manipulate them in some way. It's really to have a heart of compassion for people that are hurting. And you may, you know, pastor watching this, you get wind of somebody in your kid's school that, boy, they have a tragedy that happened to them, or something else happened to them. And as you reach out to them in true compassion, God will open up those doors. I think about an example just recently. This just happened yesterday. There was a lady that was in crisis. Her adult daughter had overdosed on drugs and died. And so this woman was in crisis. Well, a friend of hers that worked with her began to love on her and minister to her and try to help her find a place to have the funeral. Well, she said, you can do it at our church. So she called our church and said, hey, we need to help this lady. Sure enough, we surrounded her and had the funeral for her daughter. Her husband came with her and so on. Well, a couple of Sundays ago, they just showed up at our church. Obviously, we had ministered to them and cared for them. So they started coming. Well, yesterday, at the end of the service, when we presented the gospel, that husband raised his hand and prayed to receive Christ. And so that lady that first was a contact emails me and says, oh my gosh, I'm in tears. I can't believe it. You know, that he's come to faith in Jesus. Well, how did all this start? It started with a woman that saw somebody in crisis and began to move toward them with compassion and just to love on them. And there's something really compelling about someone who loves you and will walk with you in your darkest moments.
Yeah. That's really good. And I think we can all remember times and circumstances. I think of a guy several years ago that kind of was coaching my son, and he lost his job, and just through some conversations over time, probably about 6 months of those conversations, he flat out told me straight up, hey, look, I found out that you're a pastor. You know, Craig, you remember this. The guy was just like, hey, don't pass your religion on to me.
Yeah.
And he ends up having this crisis. And I happened to walk in through a divine appointment, walk into the same restaurant that he was eating at. And he's virtually in tears. I just walk up, say, hey, what's going on? He spills his heart out. Now, and over the course of the next 6 months, just meeting with him regularly to just encourage him. And you know, he puts his faith and trust in Jesus Christ. And today is, you know, making an impact as a multiplier in other people's lives. And got to baptize him. And then eventually his wife came to faith in Christ. And then his kids. And, you know, several years ago, got to baptize his entire family on Easter Sunday. I mean, so what it's these moments that crisis and they're spirit directed in the sense that, you know, crisis is an opportunity.
Yes.
And I think sometimes we don't see it that way. And so what I really hear you guys saying is, let's seize the opportunity in a God-appointed way to say, let me point you to a God that genuinely cares for your heart. And I'm becoming the hands and the feet of Jesus in the midst of this crisis. And the truth is, I mean, I think of crisis, I'm like, man, our world is in total crisis and chaos.
No doubt.
The spiritual opportunities are abounding. So again, great opportunity for looking for crisis. The third one we see in Jesus' life. So he was a friend to sinners. He this idea of looking for those in crisis, we see that in his life. And really, I think a third one is his attractiveness of hospitality. He was such a hospitable person. And I think this principle of this idea of hospitality is really very real. Chad, any thoughts on how this plays out in just some practical ways?
Yeah, I think loving on people is really important, right? People know right now whether or not you're being real or not, whether or not being genuine. I love the fact that, you know, we have the opportunity now to welcome people to our homes and to truly love on them. During the lockdown last year, you would think at a time where everybody's in their house, in our neighborhood, neighbors would not be talking to each other. But man, we grew closer. We would put the Sunday service on our laptop outside on our patio, and our neighbors would hear Pastor Craig preaching and the worship. I think they would open up questions, and they'd have questions with us. Well, man, that's not what I thought church was. And so anyway, this is great. Like to discover, hey, this is really what Jesus intended, right, for us as believers to be a part of. This is what being a part of a body of Christ looks like. And so it just allowed us to have gospel conversations like never before. And something First Collegeville did that's so brilliant is encouraging people to go out and prayer walk in their community. And so as we're walking, you know, we have opportunities too as we're walking around the neighborhood. And so, I just think practically now, there are so many opportunities for us to become friends with our neighbors. And it really starts there. I always say my wife is a better missionary than I am. She's great at that. She's great at connecting and loving on people. She has the gift of hospitality. She's phenomenal at it. So she makes, you know, great scones and all these different things, and we'll give them to our neighbors and just love on them. So man, they want to come and hang out with us on our patio. We extended our patio right before COVID. And so it just opened up more opportunity to engage people. And so we wanted to be able to seat about 30 people on our patio. And so it was God's timing of being able to do that and then being able to welcome people in our home. And so I think that's important. I think also thinking about engaging the city, what are the points and what are the places in the city that you can go out to and do that? What are the schools where your kids go, or their teachers, or you know, football games, soccer games, all kinds of opportunities in this city. And then thinking, when you think about an Acts 1:8 strategy, right, of Jerusalem, Samaria, and to the ends of the world, how do you take that, you know, to another place in the U.S. and then, you know, to the world and apply that and really model that? I think it's important to be intentional, you know, different than like a Europe or somewhere else, or New York, where you can just walk up and have conversations. We actually drive everywhere. And so, you know, that changes the strategy, that changes the dynamic. So being intentional about going to those places where people are naturally gathering as well.
Yeah. You know, I would just like to add, when you look at Jesus' life, you see this in Luke 5, when Matthew comes to faith in Jesus, and then they have a party, right? And they gather together in someone's home, and he invites his lost friends, and you have Jesus and his disciples kind of mixing and mingling with this rough group of guys. And it was going great till the Pharisees showed up, right? But you know, Jesus understood how to leverage hospitality in your home. When Zacchaeus, remember, when he comes to faith in Jesus, he says, I'm coming to your house. So Jesus understood the importance of going to someone's home or having someone, you know, meeting in a home that was really, really important. And I think even though our culture has changed so much from then, that is still the case. When think about it, when you have someone in your house, that's a whole different level than meeting them for breakfast or coffee or even dinner. You invite them into your life. And People are hungry for that. People don't really experience that very much. And I think you see this in the early church. You see them meeting at the temple courts, but also house to house. And it said the Lord added to their number as people were coming. So I think, you know, any ways that you can leverage hospitality is a wonderful thing. Liz and I were reaching out to a couple in our in our school system. This guy's a coach, and he's had a lot of crisis in his life. And we've been there, you know, when he buried his dad, and we've been there when he's gone through some physical problems. And we said, hey, why don't you guys come over to the house and we'll cook for you? And it was so funny to watch their reaction. You know, at first it was like, oh, we're going to go to the pastor's house. You know what I mean? I thought they probably thought there were just Bibles everywhere, you know, and I don't know what they thought, but when they came, we invited them in, they sat down, we start talking about their family and their kids, and Liz is cooking in the kitchen, and we start, and you could just watch their whole body language just kind of relax as, you know, we were just talking about life. And at the end of it, we just said, hey, we want you guys to know we love you guys. We're praying for you. We're here for you. And man, they continue to talk about that, you know, days after because of that simple act of hospitality. And I think that if we can reclaim that and even use that more, then that's more in line with New Testament evangelism than maybe, you know, just preaching to strangers, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I haven't even thought about it until recently. So our church planner in New York, before he was a believer, was a party promoter. Party promoters make great church planners. So, you know, he's inviting people to church now instead of to the party. So anyway, it's a cool, you know, because the church and all the gatherings are doing and stuff, our parties are fun. They're showing that, man, following Jesus is a lot of fun. And so it's cool to see that happen through his ministry there in New York.
Also, Chad, don't forget, in La Chapelle, they reclaimed happy hour, remember?
They did, man. It was awesome, you know, because in that, really, in Quebec, you know, no one could do small groups because, you know, everybody was hesitant about going to somebody's house. That's how cults attract cult members there. And so, you know, everybody's like, no, I don't want to go to the house. But yeah, La Chapelle reclaimed happy hour 5 to 7, or Saint Cassette in French, and call their small groups happy hour. And that's where they plant churches because those, that happy hour grows, man. And they redeemed happy hour with the gospel.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I think that this is kind of real, you know, so you're like, hey, I can, Jesus was a friend of sinners. So I need to, is there anybody who would call me, who's far from God, that would call me a friend, not an acquaintance, but a friend, right? Then I'm cultivating friendships and establishing those relationships, not out of a checked box or a project, God begins to present some of those that might be in crisis. Or, hey, there's an opportunity to be hospitable. I remember our neighbors that we were working really hard to, just felt really compelled when we knew they were far from God. We were looking for ways to serve and to be hospitable to them. And I would go home purposely early on certain days to bring up their trash cans for them and do other things. And, you know, one day he's like, dude, why do you always do this? And I'm like, oh, cause you know, it's fun to do. And I love to kind of beat you home and see if I can, you know, I didn't, you know, say, hey, let me sit you down. And it just kind of came naturally. Had some fun. He laughed at me, but then over the course of time, then we invited them into our home. We had them over for barbecues and swimming in our backyard. And then they had a crisis. His mom died. And then from there, we were, you know, able to just talk about how there's hope, even when there is loss. But that hope is found in the work and the person of Jesus Christ. And we watched he and his wife put their trust and faith in Christ over time. It's just a very simple but intentional and relational ways of really beginning to help mobilize our people like Jesus himself was doing, and he was mobilizing his team as well. But there's one other really important one, and I think this kind of a bookend. It's the front end and the back end, right? And it's the last one on prayer. It's just the importance of prayer in helping people really do evangelism Jesus style. So let's unpack that a little bit. When we say prayer, what do we mean by that?
Well, again, back to Jesus as the model, Jesus told his disciples, pray the Lord of the harvest will bring forth laborers into his harvest field. And I think that he's modeling there for us that we need to be praying for people that are far from God and praying for these spiritual opportunities. And so, you know, it really begins, as you said, begins and ends in prayer. As you identify personally, pastor, leader, you identify three or four or five people that you're praying for, that you're praying for them on a regular basis. And then you're looking for opportunities to have a hospitality. You're looking for opportunities to love on them. Then you're there in the moments when the crisis happens and praying for God to give you the words to speak as you share the gospel with them. I think that prayer is powerful. You know, James says that the prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. And so, it is wholly the responsibility of the Spirit to redeem and regenerate a person. I can't save anybody. I can't turn a heart. Only God can do that. I can be there. I can be used by God, but only God can enlighten a mind and draw a soul and regenerate a person's life. And so we are in desperate need of the Spirit of God to move. And so I think praying for the lost is a good indicator as to how important this lost person is. You know, if I've got someone close to me and they're lost, I mean, I'm praying, right? Because they are on my heart. And if I'm not praying for someone, then that may be an indication that the loss is not on my heart as it should be or as they should be. And so I think setting regular times to pray, having a list of people to pray for, but setting regular times to pray. For example, I remember years ago, I used to live in Oklahoma City. And if you know anything about Oklahoma, it's Tornado Alley. Mm-hmm. And so every Saturday at noon, I think it was at noon, the tornado sirens would go off every Saturday. It was just a normal rhythm because they were making sure they worked so that when the time came, they would be ready. And so I remember making that my mental trigger that every time I heard the sirens go off, I would pray for someone that was far from God. You know, I set alarms on my phone and on my watch so that when it goes off at 3:16, you know, that sounds a little cheesy, but at 3:16, you know, every day I'm reminded to pray for people. And I think that God honors that. And, saturating this with prayer is incredibly important.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, right behind me is our La Chapelle mural here with the La Chapelle logo. And, you know, La Chapelle is a church plant in Montreal that really ignited a church planting movement in April of 2013 when they launched. And, you know, something that we really learned there is that, you know, for generations, Christians had prayed for a movement like that to happen. But nothing happened. And then until April of 2013, it just exploded. And so we were standing on the shoulders of these prayer warriors who for generations had been praying for a church planting movement like that to ignite, to start. And so really, you know, nothing happens. Transformation doesn't happen without prayer. That faithful prayer, even when we don't see movement, continuing to pray. I think also as we think about people, you know, that when we have an intentional prayer strategy for the people in our lives, it creates a posture in the way we approach them, in the way we engage our mission field, that of humility and of engaging people in an intentional way. And so I think that having that prayer strategy as well really helps us think, okay, where's God at work here in my city, and how can I join them? And then God directs us, God leads us to those places where he's already at work.
Yeah. Well, prayer, you know, when you, again, as you were even saying, Pastor Craig, you know, this idea that, you know, you see Jesus, you know, calling his guys to pray to the Lord of the harvest to really send out workers. And so it does, it starts with prayer. It kind of works itself all the way through. I tell guys that I'm working with and investing my life into to be praying that God, because a lot of times people say, well, I don't have anybody in my life that's far from God. And so rather than beating them over the head, I just encourage them to start praying that God would put people in their path who are far from him. And it's I think that's a prayer that honors the Lord, and he will answer because it's his heart, right? It's at his heart because people are at his heart. And so as we begin to cultivate that on a ready, he begins to really open our eyes to the mm-hmm. harvest. And then we can begin to live that out. And then, just keep on working that prayer all the way through. And even at that, as they put their faith and trust and cross the line, we were thanking the Lord for the Spirit of God that drew them to himself. Mm-hmm. We can rejoice that someone has crossed over from death into life. I mean, what a powerful thing. Well, guys, I am just so grateful for your leadership and for what you're doing. And I hope that those that were on the talk today could really be encouraged about these four, I think are very, very simple, but very real practical things that we need to do. And so let me just hit those really good. Being a friend of sinners, looking for those who are in times of crisis, the attractiveness of hospitality, and really this idea of prayer. And again, not out of our own strategy, but really looking at the life of Jesus. What were his simple, basic evangelistic strategies that he was training and doing himself? And then I think that we can begin to do in our own ministry settings as well. Well,
Glenn, I might just add, if you're a pastor watching and you're like, how can I up the evangelism temperature in our church? Mm-hmm. I would encourage you to take these four things, as simple as they are, and say, okay, what could we do to really start praying for the lost? What mm-hmm. could we do to help our people identify 3 to 4 people that are far from God and start to pray for them by name and start to engage them in hospitality? What can we do to help our people gather in their homes? What can we do, to help them know how to respond in crisis? Or who are the people in your community that are already in crisis that you can respond to? I think all those are good questions. And then with these in mind, you can begin to craft some ideas or initiatives or events that have all these pieces in play that will make your evangelism efforts more effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I love about Jesus, is that it's so driven by relationship. And mm-hmm. And then we can just begin to take the context of what we're doing and take some simple steps towards that. One of the things that just before I close again, and just want to remind you that Disciple First is an organization that exists to really come alongside leaders, ministry leaders, to help them live as a disciple maker, to really lead a disciple making ministry, and then to leverage their influence to ignite movements of multiplying disciples. So however we might could come alongside and to really help you, again, we're just real life guys, ordinary guys who are banging it out in our local church setting, but also have God's been using us to come alongside other pastors and ministry leaders to help equip them in those same kinds of areas. So however we can help you do that, you can go to our website. It's just www.disciplefirst.com. Again, that's disciplefirst.com. Well, guys, Chad, Craig, thank you for taking some time. And I know we're going to be having some more conversations, over the next couple of weeks in areas related to this as well. So I'm looking forward to spending a little bit more time talking more about this idea of being and creating a disciple-making churches, making and multiplying disciples like Jesus.
Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope that you enjoyed that episode, and I hope that it helped you out and gave you some practical steps to take in evangelizing the lost and spreading the gospel. Hey, I just want to remind you again that coming up November 4th and 5th of this year, 2021, we're going to be hosting another National Disciple Making Forum in Nashville, Tennessee at Brentwood Baptist Church. So if you're interested in that, make sure you go to discipleship.org to buy your tickets right now before they are sold out. All right, y'all, have a great day, and I'll see you on the next episode.